if you look around at what's going on, it's a complete unmitigated disaster. Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. This week, we talk about the end of credit cards. Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next. There's no way around it.
Why am I in this handbasket and where are we going?
Right?
Yeah.
Like, the inmates are running the asylum. So, dear listener, there's just been a deluge of news about major, epic-level security breaches in the last several months. It just seems like more and more coming because there have been some fundamental screw-ups that are affecting lots of, you know, sort of legacy, gigantic Byzantine corporations who have been entrusted with our personal data.
Yes, yes, large amounts of our personal data.
Mm-hmm. And hilariously, one of them was selected as Gartner's Security Consultancy of the Year. So, of course, they leaked, like, an enormous amount of private data.
Yeah.
Just to make sure that the irony needle was at the full end of the spectrum, all the way pegged. Completely ironic.
I had this friend when I was younger who had this life philosophy that I'm sure he's burned out long before now, but it was anything worth doing is worth overdoing. And it reminds me of this.
I mean, look, I wouldn't want to be responsible for cybersecurity ever.
No.
It's hard enough even with a silly little web server or a couple of EC2 instances to keep up to date with hackers. Like, you can't, you have to, it has to be like a full-time job for an entire team of people. Like, how do you even? And if you think about it, you know, there have been plenty of highly publicized vulnerabilities and leaks, like Target, I think Home Depot.
PlayStation Network.
Yeah, I mean.
Adobe. It's, yeah.
There's tons of them. And then recently, there was a sort of flood of people who were revealed to have been storing really critical information, like including private keys on S3 in world-readable buckets.
Yeah, huge corporation. All of their, do we want to say the name?
Yeah, sure. It's in the news.
Yeah, Viacom. Mm. Viacom was storing public keys that allow access to their entire infrastructure, including the AWS account itself.
And full disk images.
And full disk images in a publicly readable S3 directory.
The thing that's truly scary about this, and the reason this is not going to go away or get better, is that the response of all of the big companies is to downplay it. And I think it was Verizon that said something so ridiculous. They're like, oh, well, yeah, there were disk images there, but they were all encrypted. And it's like, yeah, but the private keys were sitting right there too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And they're like, oh, we've taken care of the problem. No one's data was compromised. Like I feel like your definition of taking care of the problem is that you just went in and changed directory permissions on the S3 bucket. I feel like all of the certificates weren't reissued and all that stuff. I mean, that's just my impression I got from the tone of the response. But they seem to really like, oh, yeah, no big deal.
It's not a problem.
Can I really downplay it? Yeah.
Yeah. We closed the barn door.
Yeah.
Right? It's like but guess what? They could be like, oh, there was no customer information on those disk images. But if you gave away your private keys and people can like get into those images, they could do everything from spoof your website to hack into your, I mean, who knows what all information's in there?
Access, direct access to the S3 account and all the disk images were in there. People could spin up fake Viacom servers if they wanted to, and you'd never know the difference.
Right. There was a Viacom hack that was, I think that one was primarily email logs. That might have been the Deloitte one too. I can't even keep them straight.
Yeah, there's so many at this point.
And for them to say, you know, just to harp on the response, for them to be like, oh, well, there were no customer emails in there. It's like, yeah, well, if you like, think about this for a second. Imagine somebody gets your phone, dear listener. And well, I won't even do it in the abstract. Let's just use me. So on my phone, you know, I have a ton of apps that are on there and they have really privileged security levels to a lot of things.
Right.
So, you know, and some of them are like sort of double password protected. So like my phone, it's got a passcode on it. If you don't have a passcode on your phone, you're crazy.
Yes.
But let's say, but I do. And then you get in and stuff like my banking app also has a password on it with Touch ID. So every single time I open it, I have to authenticate.
Yeah.
Some of our, you know, we've got services that we use that require even two-factor auth with like something like Authy. But guess what?
Google Authenticator is on your phone.
It's on my phone, right? So if somebody, if for example, somebody guessed my PIN number, which wouldn't be, you know, before Touch ID, this was not that big a deal. I mean, you could be sitting in a Starbucks and watch me type it in and then steal my phone and run away. You know, it's like, it's, or I could just leave it behind. So, all right. So if you see my code, you see my code, you get into my phone. If you get into my phone, you're into my email. And almost every service I use allows you to reset the password with an email prompt or email. It's like, what would you call it? It's like email confirmation.
Yeah.
So if you watched me type in my code and you happen to notice what it was and then just snatch my phone and took off, right? So like you've got my phone, you know the passcode. You have full access to my email. You can now go and reset my bank password. Like there's nothing stopping you. So like,
yeah, you can get into work accounts.
You could get into my main Gmail. Well, you'd be in my main Gmail, but you could reset the account. So even I couldn't get into it.
Right.
I couldn't lock the other person out. So to say something like, and you know, it would be hard to do all those things. But the point is, if somebody's email gets out, it's full of all sorts of information that would really, like, even somebody who's not a hacker like me, even if they're reasonably technical, they'd be able to either social engineer password resets or just do straight up password resets. Or scariest of all, they don't let you know that they're in there and they just keep watching. They're just totally easy. You know, someone could just be logged into my Gmail and just, you know, like people don't have the average person doesn't have a respect for how sensitive email is. It's not just like some notes back and forth about like project management. It's incredibly sensitive information.
Yeah, it is. It is. And access to business information, access to personal and financial information. And like you said, it's how you reset all of your access to everything else.
Yeah. So it's become this sort of de facto two-factor auth, really, you know, but I don't think people think of it like that. I know they don't, because I've talked to them. You know, I was sitting next to a guy in a meeting and he just opened up his phone and I was like, he's like, oh yeah, I don't keep a password in my phone. And I overreacted. I was like, are you crazy?
Yeah.
And he's like what's wrong with you?
Like, and I'm like, it's just email.
Right. It's just email. The email's the keys to the kingdom.
Yeah.
So, you know, so for somebody to say, back to the response thing, for somebody to say, oh, it's just some email and like, that's no big deal, is them doing, you know full well that they're doing major damage control and they're freaking out internally. And hopefully, you know, what would you even do? Hire a bunch of hackers to do penetration testing like you should have been doing, I suppose. So there's another one. I don't know if you heard this, but are you familiar with the Mac application called Handbrake?
Yes, I have used it.
Yeah, I have on occasion as well. Apparently, it got infected with malware, and 50% of the people who have that software potentially had malware that was phishing through their OSX keychain.
Oh, lovely. Okay. Yeah. I'm glad I don't currently use it.
Yeah, I haven't used it in a long time.
Yeah, I haven't either. But at one point I had it. But yeah, Handbrake. And then there was also the Equifax hack.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that was super scary.
And that was what kicked this whole thing off. So
yeah,
there are three large credit reporting organizations in the U.S. What is it? Equifax, Experian,
and TransUnion.
TransUnion, very good. So Equifax leaked the most, the information personal enough about people to basically have like an identity theft bonanza.
Yeah, names, address, social security numbers, in some cases credit
cards, card numbers,
date of birth, you name it.
Yeah, pretty much anything you'd need to get into somebody's bank account if they use online banking or create accounts. And it was only like 135 million people affected. So
yeah, just a drop in the bucket, you know.
Yeah, so what's the big deal? And like finally, the CEO was, I don't know if he stepped down or was fired, but I mean, this is a company who, like, by definition, at the most fundamental levels, should be hyper paranoid about security.
Yeah, I mean, people's entire financial, like, future and life planning and what have you can rely on that credit score. I mean, that credit score is how you buy a house. It's how you open a credit card. It's how you, it's what lets you buy a, you know, get a loan. And
it's kind of important to a lot of people. And
yeah,
And you know what else is important to a lot of people? The money in their checking account. So if someone takes it out.
Yeah, I kind of need it to be there. I have bills to pay.
It would be nice. Mm-hmm. So what is this? Okay, so the point of the show in general, and this episode in particular, is like, okay, what does this mean? You know, what is this going to do? So if we imagine, because, you know, we're both in tech. Everyone who listens is probably in tech, but I don't know, maybe not. This is a really hard problem to solve. I mean,
it is
really hard.
And it's just going to get bigger.
Yeah, this is not going to go away. So if it kind of reminds me of, there's a sort of, how do I say this without opening up a can of worms? There's a propaganda technique that not so nice governments employ. It's well known to, let's just say, create an unstable environment inside of their own country in order mm-hmm. to coerce public sentiment toward police state. So if you want to, if for some reason you're in a position of control in a, you know, say in the United States, and you wanted to have National Guard, Army, military people with machine guns on every corner, all you need to do is, you know, do some, you know, tinfoil hat type stuff, blow a few things up, and all of a sudden the population is going to demand that you do something about it. And that's going to look like people with machine guns. So, you know, at the most extreme levels. You know, this totally happened in Boston, like a couple of years back, the Marathon bomber.
The entire city shut down.
Entire city shut down. And there were people with machine guns and tanks mm-hmm. rolling around in Boston.
I mean, on the one hand, it was kind of impressive that, like, the entire city was so into catching this guy that, like, everything stopped.
Mm.
On the other hand, it was kind of scary that the entire city was so into catching this guy that everything stopped.
Yeah. It's like, have some perspective. It was a horrible tragedy. They were definitely crazy terrorist type people. But even back then, in Russia, this is delicate territory, of course. But I mean, I know people that were there. So, you know, I understand. I'm not saying it wasn't a big deal. But it kind of is like, I feel like it's encouraging to people who are looking to further their agenda by gaining attention, how much attention they got.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's a fine line, obviously. I don't know where it balances off. But speaking of which, back when that was happening, the police band was being broadcast over the internet, and there were like 100,000 people listening to it in real time on their phones while the police were like, okay, we think he's over here. And, you know.
Yeah, I remember listening to that.
Yeah. And the police were like, would everyone please stop? They were like, would you please stop this? You're like, you're taking this information that is private and you're making it public, and it's causing a problem for us, which is a very similar sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I remember listening to that, and some of my closest friends are in Boston and worked very near the Marathon site and everything. So not to be insensitive about it, but it was wild.
Yeah. I went to school blocks from there. So I have a million friends there and family too. So yeah, it was horrible. It was really bad. So the thing is, the reason I brought that up is because stuff like this, I don't think it's planned. I'd be pretty much willing to bet but not something that was on purpose, but it does further the agenda of people who want change. So if you consider this like an attack on our personal well-being, our the safety of our money, which is not a long leap from your personal well-being,
right?
Then people are going to demand that something happens. And there's only one thing that I can see happening that makes any sense and is on the horizon in any way, and it's going to involve these critic agencies of sort of the constellation of businesses that exist in the credit card space ceasing to exist, because the model was created in a time that was drastically different, and everything about it is fundamentally insecure. Obviously,
yeah. I mean, I've thought that since the very first time I had to give someone my credit card number over the phone. Like, I'm going to tell this random stranger my card number and hope they only use it for the thing they're saying they will.
Right. Paying in a restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing keeping them from just writing down that number and walking out the door with it.
Yeah. Literally nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, well, not. I mean, I suppose morals.
Well,
but,
yeah.
But
morals.
in terms of assuming you have a compromised moral person, then... Yeah, they just do a way in the U.S. It's not like this other places, but in the U.S., you still hand your card to somebody and they walk away with it.
Mm-hmm.
It would take them literally 10 seconds to take, you know, with the pencil And
yeah, or take a photo.
Oh yeah, even easier. Just take a photo. And they have all the information it would take to start buying stuff on Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like they ask you for the security code on the back. Like, what's the point of that?
Yeah.
They can just can look at your back, look at the back of your car just as easily.
But you know what that technology, that solution is from? It's from the chunk machine. So because the chunk machine, we probably have the people listening to this aren't even old enough to know what I'm talking about, but it used to be the whole reason why the numbers on a credit card are raised doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah. They could make a carbon copy.
Literal piece of carbon paper copy that you would then sign, like a contract.
Mm-hmm.
So it's funny because I've started to see credit cards that don't have raised numbers anymore. And I'm like, wow, that looks really weird.
Oh, yeah. You know, I don't think I have a fairly new Capital One card, and I don't think it has raised numbers.
Right. I believe it. I mean, why would it?
Yeah, there's no reason for it to. And actually, I raised numbers are annoying to me because the silver or the ink or whatever that they put on them always gets rubbed off and it makes the number harder to read.
You can't read it. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's like, I mean, so here's the thing. Why does it even have the number on it? It shouldn't.
Yeah, it should just have the chip.
Right. So, yeah. Okay. So that's, so here we go into like the new technology. Yeah, really. Like, why do you even need to know your credit card number?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it even visible?
And why can't it be constantly changing one time use?
Well, that's where we're at, right?
It's going to have to be.
It has to be. And so that's what supposedly, I guess that my understanding is that's supposed to be what the chip does. And that's why it takes so long.
Yeah, that would make sense. It's basically private key encryption is my understanding.
Yeah. You get
like a single use token.
Right. It's like Stripe in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
Where, okay. But
those cards still have numbers on them and they still have the magnetic strip. And like we have cards with chips in them when we go to some places and they're like, oh, go ahead and swipe it. Don't use the chip reader. Mm. Or you can still call up someone and give them your number off the back of the card or go to Amazon and punch in the number.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have a way that's just the chip.
Yeah.
And the companies are like, here's your chip. Here's your little USB reader for it.
And guess what? And guess who's like totally positioned to do this?
Square
and Apple. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So Square is the one that's it's actually a combination of Square and Apple. Like Square is set up to make the transition. So they have sort of fallback approaches for every kind of common POS purchase,
mm-hmm.
including cash. And it's cheap and simple and, you know, it's less expensive than a horrible NCR cash register setup. So, you know, all the small business that you think of, like a salon. So like the massage place I go to, the place that cuts my hair, the coffee place I go to in the morning, my gym, the personal trainer guy, every single one of them uses Square or some knockoff of Square, which, you know, there's a few.
Yeah. I mean, I could name 4 or 5 local companies here that I've noticed that use them too. So.
Mm-hmm. And so in each case, all of them have a different, some of them only have the swipe reader. Some of them have the chip extension peripheral, and the chip card reader comes built in with Apple Pay and, you know, mm-hmm. and Google Wallet, whatever the Google one's called, Android Pay. So if you take all of the current context into consideration, we're going to be paying with our phones everywhere. Like, it's like that's, yeah, that's
remember
it.
That company, remember that company that wants to embed a chip in your hand?
No, I don't remember that.
Oh, we talked about it just a couple of episodes ago.
Really? Was that? Oh, yeah. In the web between your thumb and your
right.
And your,
yeah. Yeah, I'm. That's starting to feel more secure.
Right. And so, well, here's another one. I actually just saw a really good presentation on the Disney Magic Band. The mm-hmm. user experience of that. It's the same thing. It's like you know, you don't see credit card numbers not displayed on it. Nobody cares what the number is. You just want right. to. You. It's on you. And you touch
it's
it to
linked
the
to your credit card. Yeah.
So right now, like Apple Pay, Android Pay, I suppose the Samsung Pay as well, they all link to some sort of payment instrument, usually a credit card. It could be a debit card. I think you can pick a debit card if you want to have different fee structure.
Yeah, some of them you can hook directly to your bank account.
Oh, I didn't know that. So the what happens is it's like a payment solution for the current retail environment. So like mm-hmm. the credit card concept and all of the things that lead up to getting applying for, receiving a credit card, and then using a credit card are all, it's like they're all stuck in the chunk era. And it's like, no, we need something that's way more secure than that. And we need a better identity solution for authentication. And it needs to be, there needs to be constantly rotating numbers. Like it needs to constantly change for every transaction. And, you know, I guess the chips are a step forward, but when you compare them back to back, there's no, you know, not everybody takes Apple Pay, but everybody that takes Apple Pay, that's what I use because it is way, way better than using the card. So it seems like the user experience is improved. The security is better. You've got biometric authentication. When the new iPhone comes out, you're going to have even better biometric authentication with the Face ID.
Mm-hmm.
And assuming it works, which it will, or they wouldn't have released it. And like that, so if you imagine like Face ID extrapolated into other areas of the process of applying for and receiving a credit card, it becomes, to me, that appears like a more modern solution that has an appropriate level of security, I guess, you know, difficulty to hack. And weirdly, in an extremely unusual turn of events, isn't inconvenient. Because usually that's the trade-off. Usually the trade-off is it's either secure or convenient.
Yeah, but I mean, to me, the big thing is that we need to get to a point where it's single-use tokens for everything.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It should be invisible to the user. It's not like you have to, okay, let me generate a new token. You know, you're not going to be doing that thing all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like running a command line script every time you want to buy a coffee.
Right.
I mean, it's a disaster.
Yeah, it is.
If you look around at what's going on, it's a complete unmitigated disaster. And the fact that everything that you need, I feel like I don't want to give fuel to the sort of Luddites that are like, see, I told you we shouldn't have put all of our stuff online. But
right.
If you don't put your stuff online, you don't exist
anymore.
You
can't function. You can't function in this world without having at least some bit of personal information or a credit card or a bank statement number or something online. You can't function in modern society.
Yeah, you're you know, off the grid. You're off the grid, which, yeah, you know, not impossible, but certainly not anywhere near the mainstream. That's an extreme fringe. I think what happens if it becomes rampant that credit card companies or giant retailers or whatever continue to have these security breaches, which they will, then it creates the environment for a disruptor to come along and really create, I was going to say fix it once and for all, but that's not true. They'll create something that will be appropriate to the context, the current context.
Yeah, for now. They'll fix it for now.
Right.
You know, thinking about this now kind of surprises me. Who hasn't made an attempt at fixing this yet is Amazon.
Yeah. Well, guess why? Because the fraud's not their problem. It's the credit card company's problem.
Right. Well, that's true. But think of how much information they have.
Meaning, okay, this is interesting. So like, what do you, like, say that again? What do you mean?
If Amazon would come up with the solution for this, then Amazon would be protecting themselves in the event of a major data breach, because Amazon has all of this personal information on millions of people and millions of companies.
Okay, so let me say that back to you, because it's actually huge, I think.
Okay.
So on the one hand, they've got AWS, which is a gigantic attack surface for their AWS customers. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, it's kind of the security, the onus of security for their customers, and we're AWS customers, it's kind of on us.
It is kind of on us, yeah.
It's like, we're just renting you servers. If you leave the thing wide open, that's your problem. But there must be a layer, because it's a gigantic service. There's got to be a layer that they have metadata associated with all this stuff that theoretically that layer could get compromised.
Yeah, I mean, not every EC2 instance you spin up is on its own physical server. There's massive amounts of virtualization going on there, and a layer of virtualization software that could potentially lead to vulnerabilities. But I was saying also specifically, they have just like financial information and credit card information and contact information and all of that on every AWS customer. And some of those customers are also huge. And just in that regard, just totally separate of, oh, someone's AWS server getting hacked.
Right. Yep. So, yeah. And let's not forget Amazon.com, the retailer.
Exactly, yeah.
That just has, I mean, I would love to know. I don't know how many credit cards they have on file, but I'll bet you it's more than 10. So, you know, the amount of...
It's got to be at least 100.
Yeah. Dozens, even. Yeah. So, you know, They don't have, you would think, I mean, they have Amazon, whatever it's called, Amazon Pay or something. It's like a buy now button from Amazon.
Right. Right. It's a Stripe-like thing that is processed through Amazon Payments.
Right. Oh, that I think that is what it's called, Amazon Payments. So it's kind of interesting that they haven't got a, it's not really a Stripe competitor, though. Like,
no.
They don't have a...
It's more of a PayPal competitor.
Right. I don't think they have the sort of AWS version of Stripe, which is a little bit surprising.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't, and I don't, I also think they don't have, I can't think of one thing they have that's like a specifically a security focused thing other than IAM or IAM, Identity Account Management. I can't think of anything. I mean, they've got two-factor auth on the console and stuff.
They got two-factor auth on the .com accounts.
But they don't have a security as a service solution, I don't think.
No, they don't. They don't have security as a service.
I guess maybe that's impossible. But it's so the thing is, it feels, okay, if I was going to make a prediction, like what happens in the future, anything that requires your identity is going to be biometric and it's going to be on phones initially. And then that'll probably turn into a ring or a wrist, a watch, some sort of bracelet thing on your ear or an implant, because there's just no, it can't, as the race, the arms race between hackers and retailers or whatever, credit card company, anybody that's touching finances, identity, let's call them identity protectors, as they do a worse and worse job and the arms race is getting lost, it makes sense for people to, you know, consumers, it makes sense to incur the switching costs of going from, you know, I'm used to, I don't know, writing checks off of a Bank of America account over to, I am going to attach Apple Pay to a Bitcoin account. Like, it's a pain in the butt to do that. But the costs that the switching costs are not, they're starting to look less and less big compared to the alternative, the status quo.
Yeah, less and less big and more worth it. I mean, this problem is not going to go away. And you can't rely on other people making secure systems, because even the ones that try their very best are not going to get it right all the time.
And even if company A does get it right, company B can let all your information out. And that screws over company A too, because then somebody creates an account on company A's service that's totally secure, perfectly secure. But now there's a phony account on there because company B leaked all my private information. Mm-hmm. So now company A's got a problem because I'm calling them saying, look, I don't have a credit card with you. And now you're saying I owe you $10,000. That's now company A's problem. So it's like one, it's the problem. The problem is like,
it's like dominoes.
One person ruins it for everyone. And and that person has already ruined it. 100 people have already ruined it.
Yeah. And it seems like lately it's getting ruined every day.
Yeah, between the S3 thing and
the Equifax thing and the
I mean, there's just, so we started researching this and then we just stopped after we hit like 3 or 4 gigantic, so far in 2017, epic world hacks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just 2017. And there are like, if you search for that, we'll put links in the show notes. There's like pages and pages of, you know, and we're just talking about US stuff. There's stuff all over the world that's just like egregious, like so bad. And the company's responding like, oh, well, there was no customer data in any of those files. Sure. Yeah. Sure. We had login information for all of our admin servers, but
there was no customer data.
Yeah. There was no customer data leaked at that time. But, you know, hackers can log into our backend systems, which are full of customer data. So,
yeah, there was no data leaked at that time. We just gave them access to it at any future point should they want it.
Yeah. So there's no way around it. There's no way around biometric.
Yeah, and then your fingerprints get stolen.
Well, so here's a funny thing because people have been talking about Face ID, switching from Touch ID to Face ID, because there have been a couple of, like, you know, Android's had a couple of bad versions of unlock the phone with your face, and Samsung has one too. And they weren't, they were using the regular camera.
Mm-hmm.
And what Apple did was they basically took an Xbox Kinect and jammed it into that little bar at the top of the iPhone X.
Oh, is that what the bar is for?
Yeah, it's not a camera. It's like, I think there are 8 different sensors there, including depth, and they've got software on a chip that's specifically optimized.
So it's like a 3D map of your face?
That's just one of the sensors.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, it's incredibly interesting from a design perspective. If they open up developer access to that input, mm-hmm. it'll be super cool. But it's not a camera. It's a variety of sensors that are incredibly hard, would be incredibly hard to spoof. And according to Apple, who obviously is going to say this, but I tend to believe them, and I'm not an Apple fanboy. Mm-hmm. They say that for a variety of reasons, it's much safer than, like an order of magnitude safer than a fingerprint sensor, because believe it or not, you can have false positives on the fingerprint sensor. Like something like 1 in every 1,000 fingerprints is a match.
Right, because like, they're only getting a partial print.
Right, so there's like a margin of error that can be overcome with literally with someone else's, with the wrong finger. There's a title for you, wrong finger. So the face apparently is much more unique than the fingerprint. And okay.
So what happens when it's a few years from now and Face ID is a thing? And one of my nephews gets mad at his twin brother nephew.
Yeah, they bring up the twins thing. They talk about the twins thing. Yeah.
I guess there's enough of a difference.
I can't remember the specifics. There's a much higher possibility that twins can unlock each other's phones. Mm-hmm. But it's still pretty, I'm probably making this up, but my sense of it was that, wow, twins isn't a problem. Like they thought about a lot of things. They were like sunglasses, weather conditions, hats, everything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And here's another one. You can't just hold the phone up to your sleeping dad's face to buy something because his eyes have to be open for it to work.
I just started to say, I wonder if they've accounted for my prosthetic eye.
Who knows? I don't know. But your eyes do have to be open for it to work.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's just say that it's really easy to use, really secure, works all the time, keeps people out who are supposed to be out. All of a sudden, you know, you can prove prove that you're the same person who opened the account. That, you know, mm-hmm. You want to buy this thing with this account? Well, prove that you're the person who owns the account. Okay, you proved it. I just scanned your face. Whereas...
would you have to update it if you gained or lost a lot of weight?
I don't know. Like, these are all... This is all wild, interesting information.
Yeah.
So, like, who knows? Maybe it updates every time. Every time you use it, if it's close enough to the last time, it updates.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
So, you know, what happens if you're in a bad car accident? I don't know. Maybe you're locked out of your phone. And it does fail back to, like, a pin. But,
right.
But let's say that it gets really good and it becomes like nobody's ever even using their PIN anymore. It's like, we're tracking analytics on this and literally nobody's used their PIN in 10 years. Over 50 million users. Mm-hmm. Everybody's using Face Unlock. Maybe it's time to switch over to Face Unlock. You get into that thing though. Like what happens if it fails? Like who gets your photos back, you know?
Yeah.
But I guess that's the trade-off. Like, if you lose your face, you got bigger problems than your photos.
Generally speaking, yes.
Yeah. I mean, I'll bet you it has happened that somebody's been like, Apple, I got my hand chopped off and I can't remember my PIN code.
Yeah, I bet it's happened.
I bet you it has. I mean, they've had enough users.
Yeah, I have injured my fingers enough that on multiple occasions Touch ID has not worked because I've got a big cut on my thumb or a burn on my finger or something. I've started putting more backup fingers in there just in case.
Well, now here's another thing. I know a lot of people, you can put up to 10 fingerprints in your phone. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people who have kids who let their kids or their wife or whatever, their spouse, put their fingerprint on there too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like when do this thing at karate where Cooper is, he has a class and then I have a class and he's got to sit there for like an hour and a half while I'm in my karate class and he's got nothing to do. Oh, can I use your phone? And I'm like, yeah, but don't let it go to sleep because if you have to log back in, you're not going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
And so fine, give me your finger. Okay. Put his finger in the Touch ID. From what I've heard, you're not allowed to do that with Face ID. Like you can't put multiple faces in. So, I mean, certainly that's just a potential software update or a feature that they could add, but
right.
They probably don't want to do that.
I could see the need for like maybe two.
Mm-hmm.
Like for instance, if I had that and I did want to put Richard's face in there in case something happened to me, like an emergency.
Yeah. So that's a great story that you just brought up when the hurricane was the hurricane that was coming to Florida. I think it was Irma. Mm-hmm. there was this, I was reading a story about this walkie-talkie app that got like something like 2 million downloads in a week, because what it does is it allows you to peer-to-peer communicate with people in your network. I don't know how it works. I'm not sure how it works. But the story included a bunch of, it was like a party line almost, like a CB radio.
Okay.
And so there's like a lot going on. And so there would be different channels that you could switch to. And it'd be like, on this channel, please don't do weather updates here. Do those on this other channel so that it's not cluttered. Mm-hmm. So you'd have like lots and lots of people on the thing. So there were a whole bunch of really interesting announced safety sorts of stuff. Like, hey, public service, you know, PSA channel. One of the things was unlock your phone, take the PIN code off your phone during the hurricane in case you're knocked out or unconscious or worse, and your kid has to use your phone. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about that, and I'm like, oh man, because you wouldn't, you know, don't want to lose your primary link to the communication network in a situation right. like that. But what happens if, you know, something bad happens, which is fairly, you know, the increased percentage chance of something bad happening, somebody getting separated or whatever. And it was kind of like, everybody, mm-hmm. while this is going on, unlock your phones because you're in an emergency situation and yada, yada, yada. It would be pretty rough to be in a situation where, like, you know, I'm knocked out or whatever, and Cooper's got my phone and needs to call an ambulance, but he can't open the freaking thing.
Right. Well, I mean, you can always make emergency calls from the home screen without unlocking it.
If you know a phone number.
Right. You're limited to, like, 911.
Yeah, which he probably doesn't even know. Like, come to think of it, I should teach him that. But
you should teach him that, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. I mean, honestly, I've never used it, actually. It really should just immediately call 911. It probably does. Mm-hmm. But anyway, still, like, does he know how to do that? What if it's Maggie? She doesn't know how to read.
Yeah, and there are different levels of emergency, too. There's, I need to go to the hospital, and then there's, I really need to get in touch with, like, my husband or my wife.
Mm-hmm.
I need to check and make sure my kids are okay. Like, not every urgent phone call you need to make is going to need to go to 911.
True. Yeah, so I'm actually looking at it on my iPhone right now. It just gives you the phone number keypad. It doesn't do anything automatically.
Mm.
So, I mean, that's something. It's better than nothing, but it's like,
yeah.
It's like, look, I'm in the middle of a hurricane. My parent is knocked unconscious. I need to watch some YouTube videos right now.
Right.
Because I am stressed out.
Yeah, you know, at the same time, though, unlocking your phone, I was watching, it was really surreal to watch vlogs of all these people fleeing Florida.
Hmm.
And there were a lot of them that were like, I'm leaving, but I'm going just far enough that I can get back as soon as humanly possible because looters.
Yeah.
And to think that, okay, having your phone unlocked so your kid can access it, that's great. But if you're in that situation and something happens, your phone's just laying around, anybody could take it too. Because people are going to be doing that during those times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a mess. I guess that's definitely a fringe case compared to like e-commerce. But it seems like, you know, we were talking before the show, and it's like, what are we going to call this episode? And it, like, what it feels like is the end of credit cards as we know it. Because
something's going to have to change.
Right. Because the switching costs are suddenly don't seem so bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like it's going to take a lot longer to change than it should, but it's going to have to.
Right. And we both, I think, signed up for that coin credit card, which was a failure, but the concept was interesting where it was shaped like a credit card, but the mag stripe was dynamic and you could actually switch between different cards using the physical form factor of a credit card. Turns out it was actually impossible.
Yeah.
Apparently, at least for this company. But it's going to be the phones and or whatever the phones turn into by the time it happens. But it just has to turn into biometric. Like this mother's maiden name thing, it doesn't work.
No.
The social security number was never meant for this. Your license number is never meant for this. And even your fingerprint is a bad fit for this, as security researchers are happy to tell you, because you leave them everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I started to say we need tiny DNA scanners, but we leave DNA everywhere, too.
Mm-hmm. So how do you prove that you're present? I guess it's your face, right? Like, that's the thing.
Retina.
Yeah. Minority Report. Yeah. You know, like, I need that guy's eyeballs, please. Where Tom Cruise gets the operation in the dirty back room. Ugh.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the worst thing ever. All right, we've decided credit cards are over. I wonder if there's, I feel like cryptocurrency plays into this too.
I feel like it does too somehow, at least for the online stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, think about it. Like everything's online stuff, even if I'm buying stuff in person. I'm not giving cash to anybody. I'm typing my phone in this thing. Like, what happens in the background is irrelevant.
True. It's online stuff. Yeah.
Right. It's happening online. It's just a different end. It's like no
different interface. Yeah.
Right. So if the banks and related credit industry businesses can't get it together, and of course they can't, because how could they? It's just impossible. Then, you know, okay, well, what do I do? And if you look at, if you research it a little bit, I haven't gone into it deeply, but I've, with cursory research, have noticed that places like Greece and Italy and Iceland, where the economy has completely crashed, Bitcoin is much more popular, or things like Bitcoin are much more popular, and people sort of created a barter economy and is like, you know, forget you all. We'll take care of this ourselves.
Right.
I don't know. It seems like it's hard to imagine, as hard as it is to imagine switching to cryptocurrency or paying for literally everything with an electronic device, as hard as it is to imagine actually making that transition in, you know, some sort of like near term time frame, it's even harder to imagine like a company like Visa getting their act together. It just seems impossible because they have too much baggage. There's too much legacy culture.
They don't have any motivation to do it because Viacom gets hacked. It's not Visa's fault.
Mm-hmm.
It's Viacom's fault.
Well, that's a good point.
Equifax gets hacked. It's not Visa's fault. Equifax should have done better. So they have no motivation to.
Yeah. Well, that was the whole chip thing in the U.S. The reason the chip thing happened in the U.S. was that there was legislation that said that after the Target hack, they said, look, I don't know if it was Visa, but it was people on the payment side of the fence. We're like, look, we're not going to be responsible for these retailers having leaky systems. Like, we're not going to be on the hook for refunding all this money.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you guys let the cat out of the bag. It's your problem. So then the compromise or the agreement was, okay, fine. We'll, you know, the Visa crowd, it was like, okay, we'll do that. We'll, let's all get together and we'll do our side of the thing. And we'll make these chip things available, but you guys have to do the terminals. I don't know who paid for everything, but the basic premise was the law changed so that if the retailers didn't adopt chip readers, they would be liable for any hacks. So any they would be the one that was getting sued, instead of currently, like, my Amex is amazing with, like, they'll just be like, oh, you didn't pay for that? Okay, it's gone.
Right.
You know, so you never have to worry about it. But that's going to get pretty old for a company like Amex when everybody's personal data is just like
floating around
in the
ether. Yeah.
So they're going to, at some point, the risk reward balance can't make sense. Like, they have to decrease the risk somehow.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point, because it's maybe the hack wasn't their fault, but they're still paying for the consequences of it.
Yeah. So, I mean, fraud, right? So it's like, who's responsible for fraud? You could just put it on the consumer and be like, tough. I don't know.
Yeah, you could.
Does anybody pick Equifax? I guess they don't. The credit card companies did.
Yeah. Yeah. You have no choice not to have your information out to these three major reporting bureaus.
Right. So, I mean, okay, here's a path. Here's a path that could happen. Everybody basically is like, man, we're not. No, like, if you use your credit card at some retailer who lets your information leak out and somebody's, you know, runs up a bunch of charges, too bad, you owe it. And they just basically put all the risk on the consumer. But again, the same thing happens. They wouldn't do that because that's going to drive people to other options that are less risky. Because, like, would you do that? I wouldn't use credit cards online at all if I thought
I was
responsible.
Either.
Yeah, no way. And I think I'm pretty trusting, like, I was an early adopter, let's say, of e-commerce. But if that was, I mean, maybe this is a solution. If you push the responsibility down to the end user, it's just not fair, though, because they have no control over it.
Right. I have no control that my data went to Equifax.
Yeah, it has to be biometric. And now everybody's got a biometric scanner in their pocket. So it's like that. It seems like the easiest path.
Yeah, it does.
Hmm. All right. Okay, bye, banks. Oh my gosh.
Meanwhile, I'll still have to write a check to pay my water bill.
I'm like, in some situations, I find cash really annoying, but in some situations, think how, like, simple it is.
Yeah.
It's so, like, simple. It's anonymous. It's, like, very well, it's probably the most accepted payment instrument.
It's a lot of times still quicker.
Yeah.
If you don't have to wait for people to count out a bunch of change.
Yeah.
Like if I'm going to you know, Friday night football game. Be like, okay, here's your $5.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go take my seat.
Or trying to split a bill at a restaurant.
Right.
Man, but I mean, that's not the overall solution because there's no online version of that. I guess Bitcoin's the closest thing.
Bitcoin is the closest thing, yeah.
But still, it's like, So we can either go back to the 80s, basically, more before the 80s, like 70s, 80s, when it was like actually only super rich people had credit cards and everybody else used cash and there was no online anything, which would work.
Well, there's a lot of other countries outside the U.S. that are much more cash-based societies. And in fact, I think Japan is one such. And Japan is a very cash-based society. And like, if you need to pay your electric bill in Japan, you don't write the electric company a check for or pay with your credit card. You go into 7-Eleven and you give them cash and somehow your electric bill gets paid.
Mm.
Or you go put money in a vending machine that pays your bill.
Interesting. And then on the flip side, you've got, you know, in Africa where people are paying each other with phone minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and like SMSing value to each other. I almost said money, but they're just SMSing things of value to each
other. Things of value, yeah.
It's like, how much do you want for that sheep? 50 minutes. All right, here you go. So, wild. I guess we've exhausted ourselves. All right, I guess that's it. So that's our show for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we hope you join us again next week for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.
Bye.
In case you haven't heard yet, Kelly and I are retiring Terrifying Robot Dog at the end of this season. So we've got two more episodes after this one. And after that, no more TRD. But don't fret. Here's what you can do to keep us in your ear holes. Kelly is going to be launching a podcast called Third Order at thirdorderpodcast.com. And you can listen to that there. Is it that page is up, right?
Sorry, the call momentarily dropped. You were doing so well.
But you have a page up for thirdorderpodcast.com, I believe.
I do, yes.
Cool. And we have an older podcast called The Niche Podcast at niche.cc, which I recently resubmitted to iTunes because something was screwed up there. And I listened to a couple of episodes and I'll be darned, there's some stuff from 2015 that we were talking about that's actually starting to happen now, and some stuff that I still think is right on the money.
Oh, we predicted the future.
We did. I mean, a lot of the episodes are about really techie code stuff, but if you scroll through the titles, you can kind of, well, not the titles, but the descriptions.
The titles are ridiculous.
Titles are ridiculous. But if you scroll through the descriptions, I think you'll find some things of interest. If you like this show, that was the precursor. And there are still some good stuff, relevant stuff in there. I was really surprised.
Yeah, the occasional cartoon in the show notes.
Yes, Hadios. So go to niche.cc to find that, or search iTunes or your whatever your podcast directory is for The Niche Podcast, and you'll find that. And for the software developers listening, I do a business podcast for software developers called Ditching Hourly, and that's at ditchinghourly.com. So if you are, it's a totally, completely different kind of podcast in this content-wise, but if you're a developer, you might be interested in it.
Yeah, we're still very much involved in the podcasting world.
Absolutely, yep. And I'm actually planning to start up a new one after TRD's over too, which we can tell you more about later, dear listener. But yeah, so in the meantime, in case you didn't have a pencil to jot all that down, you can go to terrifyingrobotdog.com and sign up for the email list, and we will send out all this information via email to you in your private and secure and never compromised inbox. All right, that's it for this week. Bye.
Bye.